So you're a psychiatrist.
I am.
And you're in the Department of Psychiatry at Beth Israel. But it seems that your name is more and more associated with the environmental issues.
That's
so
right.
Because how did that happen?
Oh, gosh. You want the short version?
Sure.
Okay. The year after I graduated from Harvard Med School, I had a daughter. And up until that time, I was not really that involved. I was always interested in the environment, but I wasn't actively thinking about it in any way. I think having a daughter really affected that. And it was the same time that there was something called the Whole Earth Catalog. I don't know if you're too young for that, but way before its time. And, you know, this is the 60s and sort of the hippie revolution. So a lot of it was sort of back to the land, teaching people how to grow their own food, how to make energy-efficient houses. I mean, it was really quite amazing. And it all, it really affected many people, myself included. But still, nothing significantly changed in me until 1971. It was a time when the United States was planning to build a fleet of supersonic transport planes. It was called the SST. So these were planes that would fly very, very high in the atmosphere. And there was a huge amount of money at stake, as you can imagine, because these planes would fly at much greater speeds than our commercial jets flying
now. So these were not necessarily military planes?
No, these were commercial. These were commercial passenger planes.
Okay.
And the plan was to corner the market in supersonic travel. So since France and Britain had already agreed to build the Concorde jet, there was a tremendous amount of national pride at stake. So one of my professors at Harvard Med School, Tom Fitzpatrick, who was the chairman of the Department of Dermatology, he was head of the Department of Dermatology at Mass General, he was the world authority on malignant melanoma. And he was very concerned about the fact that if we built this fleet of planes that would fly high in the atmosphere, the emissions from those planes would affect the ozone layer. And this is interesting because this is way before any awareness about chlorofluorocarbons in the ozone. That didn't happen until a paper by three people who won the Nobel Prize in chemistry in 75, and then the ozone hole wasn't discovered until 85. So this is 1971.
Okay.
And he appeared before the Senate saying that if we build this fleet of planes, we are in danger of damaging the ozone layer, and the rates of malignant melanoma and other skin cancers in the United States will skyrocket.
Right.
And that was the end of that plan. That was the end of the SST. This doctor turned around the entire debate, and that was so impressive to me that a physician had that much influence over a major public policy environmental debate because it was presented on health terms that people could really grasp. And I started thinking at that time that physicians should be much more involved in environmental issues, because ultimately degrading the environment ends up being a public health issue some way. And so I started thinking about that. And
sort of a whole new way to think about preventative.
Well, ultimately, really it's sort of the most basic form of primary preventive medicine, when you think about it. And so this is 71, and I came back to do my residency at Mass General in psychiatry. And there was a pediatrician at Children's Hospital named Helen Caldicott, who started being very actively involved in working against nuclear power. And I heard her on radio. She was the most charismatic, powerful speaker. And I went to see her saying, you know, I have this idea that physicians should really get involved in environmental matters. Why don't we start thinking about putting together an organization? She was only interested in the nuclear fuel cycle. She wasn't interested in air pollution or water pollution or things like that. We didn't know anything about climate change at that point, really. And so she convinced me that we should sort of start with the nuclear issue. And so we started trying to organize people. This is 1978. And mostly academics, mostly at Harvard, started thinking about getting together an organization. And we decided we were going to start an organization, but instead of starting a whole new organization, we learned that there was an organization called Physicians for Social Responsibility that had been formed in 1961, mostly from Harvard, that were very active during the time of atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons, published a series of articles in the New England Journal that became very influential in leading to the atmospheric nuclear test ban, leading to a lot of questions about things like civil defense. So rather than start a whole new organization, we decided that we would revive this old organization, which was still in the books, still had a 501c3 listing, but was sort of dormant. So we restarted that group in 78, early 79, took out a full-page ad in the New England Journal announcing the formation of Physicians for Social Responsibility, signed by a lot of professors here. And that ad in the New England Journal came out on the same day as Three Mile Island.
Oh my
gosh.
March
29th, 1979.
Yeah.
So we announced the rebirth of this organization. We asked people to join us. And we became a national organization in 2 weeks. We had thousands of doctors joining this group, because there were people were very concerned about nuclear radiation and public health.
What grim timing.
Unbelievable.
Gosh.
Unbelievable. And so then we, you know, started getting larger and had a constitution and board of directors, etc. And then some of the old members of Physicians for Social Responsibility were very concerned that there was too much focus on nuclear power and not enough on nuclear war. And that was my interest, was nuclear war. So I organized a conference at Harvard called The Medical Consequences of Nuclear War. And by that time, the Soviet Union had invaded Afghanistan, and the 1980 election was in full swing. So there was a lot of concern about there being a potential nuclear war in the Middle East. And that conference was very well attended and very covered by the press all over the world. And at the end of it, we wrote a full-page letter in the New York Times to Brezhnev and to Carter, saying as physicians, we were concerned that they didn't really understand what a nuclear war would mean, and we wanted to meet with them. We ended up getting a response from Brezhnev and offering to help us get Soviet physicians involved in this work. Now, that part of that came from the fact that one of our physicians, Bernard Lown, who was a professor here at the School of Public Health, another cardiologist, was very close friends with Brezhnev's personal physician, Chazov.
Oh, my.
So we ended up getting...
Jimmy Carter respond?
Jimmy Carter responded.
Okay.
We met at the White House.
Okay.
Again, covered by all the press. And we started in June of 1980, this group called the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. Four of us, all of us from Harvard. Bernard Lown, cardiology professor, Herb Abrams, who was chief of radiology at Children's and at the Brigham, Jim Muller, who was an assistant professor then of cardiology at the Brigham, and myself. And that organization eventually grew to have 250,000 members in 80 countries. And that's the group that won the Nobel Peace Prize
so
in 1985.
The organization itself
won the Peace Prize.
Won the Peace Prize, okay.
Right. And so fast forward a bit. So the focus was on nuclear, preventing a nuclear war. And then Gorbachev came into power. The relationship between the United States and Soviet Union got much, much better. And at that was the same time the ozone hole was discovered over the Antarctic, and people started thinking that we were going to be in real danger with global warming.
Right.
So this is mid-80s.
Okay.
So several physicians, including myself, started thinking these global environmental issues are very similar to the nuclear issue. They're in a sense, Armageddon in slow motion.
Mm.
In other words, the effects over a long period of time be catastrophic rather than all at once. Warming oceans, warming, you know, drought, famine, loss of water, effects on biological organisms, etc., heat waves. And so there was a small core group of us that felt that the nuclear issue was much less of a danger and that we had to address and tackle these global environmental issues.